Okay, Funky Kid Podcast 24. This is Loy Lee.
Yes, I'm Winston, and welcome to another great podcast. This week we have a review on the Intel SSD 320 series, 300 gig version. Yep, this one is not using the SATA3 6 gigabit interface, but rather the SATA2 on the 3 gigabit. And uses Intel's own SSD controller. Again, we'll tell you more about that later. There's also a review coming soon from Bob Nova, and this one we talked about last week is the ADATA triple DDR3 RAM. So we needed an Intel 1366 platform for that, so he's got all that ready. Hopefully we'll have the review ready for tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah. So
where is Bob Nova, by the way?
He's based in the States, California. Yes.
California, yeah.
That's right. An avid bencher. He's a great guy. He's got some great knowledge on how to overclock, benchmarking, you know, and vault modding. So he knows it all. Also, thanks to, we have another member, obviously. You know that Cow Killer, or how you pronounce it? Dexter.
Yeah.
It's from Texas, a student from Texas. So, again, articles and reviews and news from our team, pumping it out as soon as we can. We'll let you know. Great. Loy has been scouring the news scene. Lots of things happening in the area of Sony, Apple's, and all sorts. So we'll
Sony. You sound like a bloody local man. Sony, darling. Sony.
Sony. Yes. Sony is how UK would say it, right? But Sony is kind of like more acceptable worldwide.
Meh.
Sony. It's a Sony. No, it's a Sony.
Sony.
Sony. Yeah, so hopefully it will, we'll have more interesting topics and news next week. But let's get cracking. Intel SSD 320 series. Yes, it's a 300 gig version we had from Intel. And this SSD is based on the 25 nanometer NAND flash technology. 25 nanometers, yes, that's the latest. I wouldn't say it's the fastest, but it's the latest technology that they use for their memory chips, NAND flash memory chips. And what that means is that it's lower cost in production, plus it has better energy saving, and more applications in terms of bigger capacity. So current sizes maxes out around about 512 gig for a SSD. At that size, you're talking like thousands of dollars, right? But with the 25 nanometer NAND flash technology, it means that your SSD capacity can go all the way up to, well, currently Intel has a 600 gig version of that one. Later on in the year, we'll probably see like up to 1 terabyte. So imagine 1 terabyte SSD drives. That's coming soon. So super fast, super you know, reliability. Yeah, so we will see that soon. But yeah, so in terms of the performance, it's based on the using the SATA2 technology interface, which means that you have roughly around about 220, 230 megabytes per second write and read. Lower on the read, around about 205 megabytes per second. So yeah, I mean, it's equivalent to what the SandForce SF1200 controller. So SSD drives based on the SSD controller, the SandForce SF1200. Compared to this one, Intel SSD 320 uses Intel's own SSD controller. It's about the same performance, equivalent of. So not too bad. Price-wise, it's still looking around about, well, for the 300 gig version, around about 350, possibly 400 US dollars.
Mm-hmm. Not too bad.
But it's a 300 gig version, so it's not too bad.
It's still expensive, but then now, you know, the prices will come down soon.
Yeah. A low capacity one, so you're looking at about, what, 100, they have 160 gig, 120 gig, 80 gig, and 40 gig. So obviously, the lower the capacity, the cheaper it gets.
But But they're still pretty useless, though, isn't they? Aren't they? As in the lower capacity
ones.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go for a 40 gig or even 80 gig. I mean, the minimum I would go for is a 120, and or 160 if you can afford it. And then obviously,
how big is the hard drive on your computer at the moment?
Right now, because this is a fairly newish laptop. I say newish, it's last year's. This one has been upgraded to a 500 gig hard drive. But most laptops out there, I think a 250 would be more than enough. Yeah, even on a desktop.
I don't think so. 250 is getting pretty small, man, these days. By the time you know the computer is getting better, and you're going to be using it for longer and longer and longer. So I don't know. I'm running to I'm on 300 gig on my computer, and I've had it for 3 years now, and I'm constantly having to back things up and delete it and whatnot. So yeah. I think 500 gig minimum. This should be the standard.
Well, what it is, I tend to do this. I tend to have 120 gig or possibly 250 gig as a operating an application drive. So in other words, all my work stuff is on there. However, for storage, such as movies and MP3s and any work backed up, I use a separate drive, possibly a 1 terabyte or more. So I tend to do it that way, yeah.
Yeah,
so I think that's
I do that. I have my Drobo as well, but I try and I set up my computer in a way so everything on my computer is backed up on to a Drobo. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if I ignore something, and then it does a nightly backup as well. But it's still, I don't know.
I think we'll see. At the moment, I think the popular sizes for SSDs around about 128 gig SSDs. So that's the type of drive or SAT capacity that a lot of people go for the SSDs. In time, we'll probably see that capacity go up as user demands and user needs grow. But this Intel SSD 320 series, I think it's not. I wouldn't say it's a high end SSD. For high end, I'll go for the 510 series, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. A 320 is more for a mainstream / performance user who wants that capacity. As you see, like I said, it's the capacity of those 25 nanometer NAND flash technology can go up to 600 currently 600 gigabytes for capacity, and later on it could go up to probably a 1 terabyte and so or more. I think it was a pretty good drive, and I think Intel has a good selection of SSDs now. I mean, it wasn't something that they were into a couple of years back, but they now, that they're fully into that sort of market for SSD drives. Great.
So who's the market leader then in terms of?
Well, some people say it's Micron have been producing an amazing SSD last year. It was a C300. This year they've going to be, or they have going to be releasing the C400. I think some people have that already. Crucial have been on top of their game. Some people obviously said OCZ. They have their own, on the high-end SSDs, they have their own proprietary interface, which can be problematic. In other words, you can't really sort of interchange that onto another system without ripping the guts of the interface out, but the SSD drives on their own, they've been pretty good. OCZ. There's other companies. ADATA's been doing pretty well. What you'll find with the SSDs, a lot of the memory companies tend to make SSDs because of the NAND flash technology it uses. So I think right now it's Intel, Crucial, and OCZ are the main ones.
What about Samsung?
Samsung, they tend to make more OEM-style SSDs, such as what you'll find in Apple's bits and pieces. I haven't seen many Samsung retail products, retail SSDs, Mike.
Okay, so would OCZ be an OEM buyer?
I think they've been so tuned to the retail market, in PC market that is, that they haven't really looked into OEM. They probably do, and if they do, then they have a bigger sort of well, they have quite a lot of competition, to be honest with you, if they go to the OEM market, because Toshiba makes a lot of OEM drives, as it, and Samsung, and so on. So yeah, a lot of competition, because you go into another realm, another area, not just retail. And a lot of people think, well, you know, I mean, if you look at Dell, yeah, they make a lot of PCs, but their OEM market, believe it or not, is huge. And, you know, yeah, Dell do make a lot of OEM stuff, or source a lot of OEM stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, yeah, it's that same with HP as well. So that's the kind of game. Right, so SSDs aside, there's not much to talk about the ADATA memory, because obviously the review is not up, but hopefully it'll be ready for this weekend. And then we'll talk more about some of the new stuff that we have, including we probably will do. I'm not sure, but I'll have a chat with you in a sec about that. Basically, we've received some serial numbers for benchmarking software. Yes.
Woo.
Yes, it's the ADA 64 Extreme Edition, version 1.7, and it's basically a hardware analysis tool, plus it tells you more about your hardware, slash, you know, you can use it for benchmarking as well. Tells you everything about your processors, your internal systems, and so on. It's what a lot of people use for their screenshots, including us as well. So we've got a couple of licenses for our own use, which obviously we need, and then we'll have some spare ones. So if we might give some of that away. So basically, you download the software from ADA64.com, and then and we might just give away some of these serial numbers as a bonus. Yeah.
Wow, cheeky. Wow. That'd be good.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll probably post something up on the site for all our readers and listeners. Probably just like a prize draw, same thing. I wouldn't say a prize draw. It would be, what do you call it? It'll be a prize draw.
Prize draw?
Yeah.
Just pick a name randomly.
Yeah. So yeah. So what we'll do is probably post something on the site, find out who's interested in this type of software. Some of you wouldn't bother, some of you might be. So we only give it to people who will be using it regular. So yeah, we'll post your interest on the site, and then we'll pick a name out of the hat. So we'll post at the end of the session, our podcast session. Okay, so Loy, any interesting happenings in the world of the tech?
No, not really. Just kidding. Yeah, it's quite a bit's been happening this week. Obviously, the big news being Sony still down and still being hacked, and then what's going on? I don't know. Reportedly, some of the reportedly there's almost 25 million user accounts compromised, and then I think they picked out some 7 million people or someone, you know, losing their the possibility of losing their personal details, being credit cards and addresses and, you know, any information basically given to Sony Entertainment, online entertainment, when you're setting up an account. So this is a serious effort.
Yeah,
and so they're going a bit crazy now. So they're hiring like this, all these top security companies to come in and trying to find out what's been happening. And
well, they're asking FBI to get involved, actually. So it could be some serious there. In fact, it was something like they estimate around about 100 odd million PlayStation accounts or network has been compromised, and 25 million paying online services are compromised as well. So crazy, man. Crazy.
So there's basically, they named a few countries: Austria, Germany, Netherlands, and Spain, where they're like the most likely, you know, places that that information that's been stolen, you know. So the data goes back to like 2007, so some of it, most of it, is maybe out of date, but it's hard to say. And it's hard to say because they basically hacked into the database and copied as much as information as they can, and it is encrypted, but when you've got the database in front of you and you're not connected, you know, you're not trying to crack it inside Sony's systems, then it's just a matter of time before anyone can just break the encryption. So
yeah,
that sucks to be a game player at the moment.
Well, yeah, paying gamers. That's the thing, you know. It's always that risk, isn't it? I mean, you know, giving out your details and personal details and credit card details and things like that online. That's the reason why there are still shops. People, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I do buy a lot of stuff. Well, used to online, and it's so convenient. You just, you know, fill in the details, fill in your address, your blah blah blah, and then it gets shipped out next day. But now and again, you know, I'd probably prefer to probably go to a shop and actually just pay it over the counter, so that, you know, once the transaction's done, it's done, you know. But yeah, it's crazy, man. 70 odd million accounts affected.
And yes,
loads of credit card details floating around. Well, a friend of mine said that he'll be checking out his credit card statements every month now to make sure that nothing dodgy's come out. And
well, you're pretty much protected generally with credit cards, because you've got the fraud thing.
Yeah.
And it's because it's such a big case that these credit card companies, anything suspicious related
yeah.
to these credit cards and the Sony stuff is going to be, you know,
you're
not going to get much problems in
yeah.
when you're trying to get your money back. So I shouldn't worry about that.
As far as that is concerned, yeah, I mean, insurance-wise, you're covered, and it's just a hassle of just, you know, I mean, they're not going to automatically, a lot of the banks and credit cards, they don't automatically just refund you, and what they do...
No, they don't.
You have to physically phone and contact, ladies, look, this is not what's happened, you know, this, I didn't buy this, and I didn't, you know.
You'd be surprised that I've, you know, because I've spent the last 3 years traveling, and there was one time where I lost £2,000 from
what?
My PayPal account.
Seriously? From
yeah,
your PayPal? A PayPal account?
Yeah, so they basically... But it's because I was traveling. It wasn't until the second month that I realized that they were taking four payments of like £500. You know, because I was basically... I think I was in Thailand at the moment, at that time, and then I was like, fuck. Why does none of my cards work? So I was skint. So one quick phone call to the bank, and I was like, I didn't issue any of these payments. I can't see a proper, full-on, detailed statement because I'm traveling. But can you check it out? And then they said, okay, we'll check it out. Call back in like a couple of hours. I called back and they were like, yeah, we've tracked it down. No worries. We'll transfer the money back into your account. You should log in. And they give me some advice about how to deal with PayPal. And then they paid me back in my credit card. And then PayPal instantly tracked it down, apologized, and then yeah, if even PayPal was like pretty straightforward with it.
Oh,
so
okay.
I wouldn't be that afraid.
Okay, so they hacked into your PayPal account or something?
I don't know how they did it. They did something to PayPal, and then they just issued like four payments of £500.
Shit.
So
mm.
yeah, but these things happen, and as long as you're aware of these things that can happen, and you take precautions like not using your debit card with all these services, because with the debit card, with the difference is it's your money instantly. So if you lose your money, your hard cash from your account, then it's gone. With at least a credit card, you can dispute the payment, and
yeah.
it's still the bank's money. So
oh right,
yeah.
So covered by the financial regulations and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Okay.
So it's just So if you're smart enough just to use your credit card only for online services and stuff like that, then it should be fine.
There you go.
But then on that note, Amazon's it's not the S3, is it? What do they call it? The Amazon servers went down as well. The cloud servers.
Yeah. Was it overload or was it just a hack or what happened?
No, I think it was just a bug.
A bug.
So I haven't found anything specific about what actually happened. But then to give you the scale of what, you know, this cloud service offers, it's basically Netflix, the big online streaming service in America runs off it. A lot of Facebook games run off it. Zynga run off it. Squarespace web hosting run off it. So when Amazon servers go down, all of these services went down as well completely.
That's right. Yeah, because they do host domain names and stuff like that as well, Amazon. So
yeah, because Amazon's data farms are so big and so vast that to kind of not make a huge profit, but just to kind of rent it out while they have this space available, to not waste the space while they have it available while the company still grows, they rent it out to like bigger companies and whatnot.
Yeah, it's the same with Google. I mean, they got so much spare capacity. There's one guy who's actually not a student, a professor in some tech college or university in the States. I think it was MIT actually. Decided to work the longest digit for Pi. Normally it takes hours or days to do it on several computers, but using Google's massive resources and spare capacity of all the servers, he did it in like a couple of hours, just a few minutes actually.
Yeah.
The longest digit in Pi, I don't know how many millions of digits, but yeah, crazy, huh?
Yeah. So all these services, the more we use computers, the more we're going to be relying on the cloud, and the more chance we're going to be losing our data or losing time, losing outages. So people should be aware of stuff like this.
I reckon.
But you shouldn't lose your confidence in the cloud, because, you know, it's a small percentage of companies' services that go down. Yeah. And generally, with services like Amazon and Apple and Google and stuff like that, you don't really notice.
Yeah. So what did I tell you about this year? It's going to be the year of the hackers, man. I tell you. And it has been. It's crazy, no? All my predictions have come true. It's the year of the hackers. Yeah? 3D chips. Oh, talking about that. I'll talk about the 3D chips in a sec. But yeah, lots of the interesting things happening. We're talking about all the Amazon services and big corporation things like that. Skype. Now, Facebook and Google are fighting to buy Skype. What do you reckon?
What was the story?
Well, they want Facebook or Google. Obviously, they want to expand on their services. And basically, Skype's up for grabs. So who will win out of this then? Skype? Google or Facebook?
I would bet on Google.
Yeah, true. I'd say the same as well. Yeah.
Because if I was Skype, from a pure tech engineer perspective, I would choose Google any day over Facebook. Facebook have got the good intention. I don't think they're quite as evil as people make out to be. But with all those engineers inside Google, they could only do fucking amazing things with Skype.
That's true. I think there's more innovation at Google than there is at Facebook. I mean, Facebook.
I don't think it's more innovation.
I think it is.
There's a difference in innovation, right? So Facebook come from a different mindset than Google. Google wants to create these, you know, unique ways of changing things. But Facebook is kind of like, they just want to grow the user base, basically.
Mm.
So these two distinct mindsets. But then, yeah. But did you know that on the BlackBerry playbook, you can actually do video chat with Facebook?
Oh, can you?
Yes, there's I don't know if it's out yet, but there was a rumor saying that Grim is striking a deal with Facebook where anyone with the Facebook app on the playbook will be able to do voice and video chatting with their current chat features and all that stuff.
Mm.
So it makes sense that Facebook's in the fight to buy Skype. And I think it would benefit a lot of people if they did.
I never used to use Skype that much, but now obviously I have to, because obviously since we're doing this podcast, I think this is the only kind of way which I think we can kind of do the podcast over the internet where you're at location B and I'm location A, and like we're like a few kilometers away, but you know, we're still recording, and I think the quality's fine. It's not too bad. I think this is the only software, so voice over IP, isn't it? That's what it is, which works quite well. Who knows what will happen in if Google or Facebook kind of like take over, see what happens.
I don't think either company will be, you know, that stupid to change anything drastically, because Skype's not a startup. Skype has been around longer than,
maybe even
longer than Google. Yeah, do you know what I mean? I remember I used Skype back in 1990s. Late 1990s, because when I used to play games, we used to use, we used to use those chat room, those voice VoIP chat rooms for gamers.
Yeah, it's one called X something, wasn't it?
There's one called X something, there's one called V something. I can't remember, it's such a long time ago, it's 12 years ago. And Skype came along, because we used to use MSN actually, as well, for like smaller groups. And then Skype came along and they offered like, you know, a couple of people in the same chat conference call.
Yeah,
and the quality was much better than everything else. But then it you'd have to keep it under like 3 or 4 people in one conversation, otherwise your ping would go too high.
Yeah, and your audio quality, your voice quality would go down. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think voice technology over the next is another prediction. Here you go, technology over the internet will grow. It'll have better quality. You'll have I think Skype's doing a great job, but I reckon in a year or two there'll be new.
These are not predictions. You can't call these predictions.
Hey, I think it'll take over the phone. I mean, you know, I mean,
cellular phones. It is taking over the phone. And
this GSM.
If you said this like 7 years ago, then people go, "That's a prediction." But now it's inevitable. It's going to take over the phone.
Inevitable. What will happen to all the phone carriers? Telecom companies. I think
they'll guarantee you they'll be around. Like in the UK, you still have to, to this day, you still have to get a bloody telephone line just to get the internet.
To get you registered to become because you need to be a proof of address and so on. You know, they usually ask for your telephone bill because the landline, that is. So you can't escape that. Yeah. Crazy, huh? Okay.
Yeah, so moving on. What else have I got?
Apple? Any news on Apple?
Well, Apple related, I guess. You know, Amazon came out with 69-cent MP3s for the average price. So, where does iTunes start from? I think iTunes starts at 99-cent to 129.
So now they're competing with iTunes.
They're not competing with iTunes. iTunes is competing with them now, right? Because they've just undercut them again. They were cheaper anyway. They were 89 cents before, but now they're 69 cents. So they've gone down even lower than iTunes, where the iTunes, the premium tracks are 129.
But
Apple still owns 70% of the market share.
But with these tunes, it's not freely downloadable, meaning as in, if you buy something a tune from Amazon, you can transfer that onto any device, right?
Yes, but then Apple do that with you can do that with Apple as well. You can do that with all of them.
So with iTunes, you can buy a tune download into iTunes, and you can transfer that track onto any MP3 player.
Yes.
Through iTunes. I don't think.
Yes.
Can I?
Yes.
Oh. Because I thought there was always that big problem of people downloading tracks or buying tracks, downloading it on iTunes, but can only use it on iPad and iPod and on iPhone.
No, you can use it on anything. Once it's in your folder, then you can extract it into anything else.
Ah, right, okay.
It's no DRM on it.
Okay, that's fair enough then.
There is a kind of DRM with the apps you download. It's locked down to 5 computers.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So.
Oh yeah, and iOS 5, they're planning to have it updated over the air.
Well, it's rumors. They suspect that Verizon, with their latest update, could be testing out over the updates on the Verizon network. So, and they then that will probably come in version iOS 5, which probably means iPhone 5. But when that comes, nobody knows.
You're still waiting on iPhone 5. It ain't gonna come out.
Yeah, it'll come out.
It won't come out. It'll be a 4GS, iPhone 4GS.
But it's still the fifth generation, so it's an iPhone 5, you idiot. Anyway, Mr. Windows Phone 6, not even one.
Yeah, actually, I'm still thinking of Android or possibly, I don't know, something. I haven't decided yet. I need to get one, because my touchscreen is after more than 3 years now. Yeah. It's non-responsive, so I need to get a new phone. It's a nightmare.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, 3D chips. Let's get back onto this topic, right? Intel have unveiled its 22 nanometer Ivy Bridge processor. Yes, this one, as mentioned earlier in the year, is going to be coming out. They're going to make an announcement at the Intel IDF in September. We probably won't see any samples, probably, maybe, at the Computex, but more than likely it'll be after that. So we'll have another Intel IDF in September in California, San Francisco, and they'll probably make a proper launch and announcement then. 22 nanometer. Now, what's the difference? Well, the previous generation, the Sandy Bridge, and all the new Core I series, run on the 32 nanometer sort of technology. And so this processor now is one sort of generation down or further. 22 nanometers means lower power consumption. It means you can fit more transistors into the die. It means more processing power. How this 3D chip works, or how it sort of looks, it's all down to the way it's actually built and constructed. Whereas before it was linear, in the meaning it was on a flat surface, yeah? So all the transistor bits are on a single plane. Now this one is on several planes, right? So you'll have like three, basically, if you microscopically look into it, it's got this like it's almost like little mini buildings.
Yeah, but it's kind of like boring.
Oh yeah, it's boring, but it just means that the next generation of Intel chips would be faster, cooler, and more efficient. Yeah.
You could have just said that from the start.
I could. I just wanted to let you guys know what this big fuss is about. But 3D chips, guys. Here's another prediction. Holographic chips. Holographic 3D chips.
They'll be with us within like the next 70 years.
It's gonna happen.
Of course, it's gonna happen. like never.
But the thing was with this 22 nanometer chips, they were thinking that Moore's laws. There you go, guys. Moore's laws. If you don't know what that is, means that every generation of processors, or every 10 years, they say 10 years, but it's less anyway. Actually, each generation of processors is meant to be doubling the power of your processing power.
That's Moore's law, isn't it?
Moore's laws, yeah. But what they found out that as the chip die gets smaller,
it doesn't actually
happen. And in fact, due to physical or physics and laws of physics, it's impossible. I won't say impossible, but they think that the smallest scale of chips that they can get to is probably down to 15 nanometers, and after that then it's physically impossible for to make anything smaller. Yeah. So after that, this is where your holographic 3D chips come in then, you see, or biocells. That'd be interesting, biocells. But yeah, chips, 22 nanometer coming soon in September. Well, Intel will make an announcement then.
Okay, let's move on to some more interesting stuff. So Nintendo Wii, they've dropped the price.
Okay, what?
Yeah, so it's $150 US now. I don't know what their price is in the UK, because that's what the article said, right? Plus, they're including a
game.
Wii driving wheel and Mario Kart.
Okay.
Pretty good deal. So how much is $150? That's roughly about just over 100 quid?
No, it's 1.6 to the pound, so it's less than £95. That's cheap.
Yeah, so that's cheap with a game and a wheel. So it's definitely, they're going to come out with the new, well, this is obviously another marketing ploy to sell off all their old stock in tune for their new gaming console, which is supposedly coming tomorrow.
What, Wii 2?
Tomorrow? Next year, even.
Tomorrow? Is this when? How come I didn't know about that? Right, okay. Next year, yeah, Wii 2. Yeah, Wii 2. That'll be interesting. That'll be very interesting. Oh, incidentally, I went to the Apple shop today, and I picked up an iPad 2, okay, to have a look at and play around with. Now, it is lighter. It is. It is thinner, and it does feel quite nice. It seems faster, obviously, because of the dual core chip. However, yep. The camera is pants. It's rubbish. It's useless.
But what are you expecting? This is for like, this, this is, it's got less megapixels or less quality camera than the iPhone 4, I think, right?
Yeah.
And it's for, you know, who's gonna be, okay, if they put a kick-ass camera in there, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. But if I see anyone on the street walking around trying to take like full-on pictures with this bloody iPad, I'm gonna smack them in the head. I think, get your phone out, you freaking idiot, because what are you doing?
The iPad. The price-wise, it's okay. I don't know about. I didn't realize. I'm not sure if it is with this iPad 2, but the original iPad, the Wi-Fi version, and there's obviously this Wi-Fi plus 3G version, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And someone told me that the Wi-Fi plus 3G version has a built-in GPS. Whereas the Wi-Fi version don't have a GPS.
I don't know.
Yes, I just realized. I'm not sure about the new iPads 2, whether they both have built-in GPSs. But
is this important?
Again, location services and maps and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know if people are going to walk around with their iPads looking for directions.
Well, you could, if you had a 3G, that makes sense, right? Because you've got, because you could use it as a sat nav type thing,
yeah.
And you could download the I guess the iPhone GPSs. They got TomTom. You could download that and that work that way, using the 3G services.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't be a problem. But then there's no biggie not having one in the Wi-Fi service in the Wi-Fi thingy. I don't think.
Yeah.
Because even if you were tethering the internet, you could still use the cell tower to use your GPS.
Yeah. Well,
so
I was trying to figure out what the price difference was. Why is it an extra almost £100 or, you know, roughly $100 more for a G3G version, apart from just the, you know, for the phone carriers to make a bit of money off you. But then it's got more bits in it. That's about it. I don't know if anyone's interested in having a GPS extra, but yeah, there you go. I mean, if I was going to get one, I was just going to get the Wi-Fi version, to be honest with you. It's for nighttime reading, because I mean, I've had a few times where, as I said before, looking at the phone, it's too small when you're lying on the bed. But then you can't actually dig out your laptop and just whack it on your lap and kind of hold it in all weird positions. An iPad, you could do that, right? So what do?
Yeah.
You can sleep and play and not play, but read.
I don't do. Well, I read a lot on my RSS feeds and blogs and websites and stuff.
Well, we'll put video playback on it, right?
Amazing.
It's okay, yeah? Good.
And now that they're updated with AirPlay, I don't even have to transfer my audio or any iTunes content over to my iPad. I can just lie in my bed, as long as my iTunes is updated, I can just bring up the library, share the library on my computer,
right?
Bring it up and just stream it straight to my iPad.
So your MacBook is streaming the video content And then output it into your iPad.
It's streaming all my Wi-Fi. iTunes content.
Via Wi-Fi, right?
Yes.
Okay. And there's no signal loss. I mean, you know, great quality loss or anything like that.
Nope. Full conversion over. Yeah. Flawless conversion.
Okay. That's pretty neat then. Because, I mean, it's something that's... you know, rather than using up all the storage on your iPad, you could stream it then. Is this something that Android tablets will have? Or do you think?
I don't know. I'm not an Androidian.
Android lover.
I guess they could have it, but they don't have a dedicated client to sync. Although, as sucky as iTunes is, it's still 10 times better than what I think it's still 10 times better than what, you know, other software has.
Man, I think someone needs to educate you, Loy. I mean,
no, but
you haven't seen.
Wait. You use a Windows version of the iTunes, right?
I know.
That's minus 100%, right?
Yeah, I'm not talking about the Windows.
It works a lot faster.
Yeah, I'm talking about the actual experience now you can get now with the Android. Honestly, right? It's quite interesting. Earlier in the year when we started doing this podcasts, I looked at the Android and thought, not kind of my cup of tea. But then the apps and the systems mature in such a way and so fast, is literally the feel of the OS, but the whole user experience has improved so much. I just, you know, I couldn't believe it. It's actually an Android. And I never knew it could be that good. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, Android. I think you need to have a look at that. Because I think... a few people, not all.
Yeah. I looked at it. My cousin had one the other day in my house. I looked at it, and then I promptly put it back down.
Yeah, but he's running a 2.1. Is it 2.1 or
2.0? Yeah, 2.1, Honeycomb, whatever. No, I've got nothing against... I have. I've got everything against Android, so... But saying that, while we're on Android, I was reading the review about the Galaxy S 2.
Yeah,
my brother. No, I don't know about the OS, but the phone does look pretty sexy.
Yeah, my brother got one, and he's loving it. Yeah, it's got obviously all the dual core processors, the super AMOLED screens. It's just amazing. He says
benchmarks are like stupidly fast.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, his girlfriend's got an iPhone 4, I believe. And yeah, obviously he's got this one, and it's got a bigger screen, 8-megapixel camera, man, it rocks, full HD recording, rocks. It's got and it can handle it, no problem, and it's got a HDMI output. You can whack straight onto your TV, full HD, amazing. Can an iPhone do that? No.
See. Actually, you can stream onto your television with the iPhone.
Not full HD, mate.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
yeah, you can.
With that Galaxy S2, man, just amazing. Yeah, we haven't seen any available at this side of the ocean, but UK apparently was the first place that was able to sell.
So, yeah, apparently the Super AMOLED screen is like amazing, yeah. Which is yes, I want AMOLED screen. I want a new phone. Come on, iPhone 5.
Don't it just go for an Android.
Why would I go for an Android? All this, I think I've spent like £300 on applications, and when you're using the Mac, the integration between the three.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, this is why people are stuck with apps. Apple. If you get an iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or the iMac, then everything kind of sync flawlessly between all three systems.
Pretty much, yeah.
So
and it's almost the same interface and same usability between all three devices. So it wouldn't make sense for me to change, you know, even if I wanted to.
Yeah, that's true.
Plus, I'm grandfathered in with all the pretty money I've spent.
You're just, that's it. I think there's no turning back for you. That's it.
Yes, there is no turning back, because why would I turn back? Because, you know, the first thing I do, if I find a decent app on either device, or, you know, either any three devices, the first thing I do is look for the iPhone version or the iPad version or the Mac version. And if they've got all three, then even if this app is okay on one, I'd more than likely to buy all three because I know it's going to integrate.
Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you as well. On the Android, my brother's playing on it, and he says you can actually play Flash games, no problems at all. Amazing.
Winston,
he's super fast.
When's the last time you played a Flash game?
Thank you. No, I did actually. I used to play a lot on.
No, when's the last time you played a Flash game?
Well, I haven't played Flash games because I've been too busy working.
Well, when's the last time you played one?
Last time. Not long ago. I mean, quite long ago, actually.
Exactly.
But Flash movies, it plays Flash movies, so that's pretty good too. And it's got full support for all the Adobe stuff, which my brother loves as well, Adobe stuff. So yeah, interesting. Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you as well, certain video players, embedded video players that is, use Flash. So you can't play that on your iPhone or iPad. So there you go.
Yeah.
Something that you could think about. This is what I mean. I must say I need to educate you. I think you need to experience it yourself first and then see for yourself and think, hey, yeah, it's not too bad. It's not too bad. But then you'll never get one because I know you're Apple through and through now, aren't you? Yeah. Converted to an Apple guy, but mind you, yes. I use an iPhone for a year, and obviously I've given my iPhone to my wife, hoping to get the new iPhone. But then decided, okay, there are other options. You know, there are other phones out there that honestly do it better, but could be the equivalent.
Yeah, I guess.
But what I must admit though, the iPad. All the tablets I've actually played with, the iPad still I think rocks in terms of the tablet.
Before I forget, I mean, meaning to talk about this story. Do you know the Kindle?
Right.
I talked about they're possibly releasing a Kindle type tablet.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But then a story I completely missed, and I don't know how, was there's a very cheap ad-based Kindle out now.
Ad-based? What do you mean?
Ad-based.
As in, like, ads?
Yeah. So they discount the Kindle, and then before you read a book or whatever you do, there's ads showing up on there, and then they get revenue through that way. That's pretty neat, don't you think?
Okay, so it'll be like reading a book with
like the Amazon. It's like the Google of Amazon, or the...
Would that be really annoying if you're reading through? Or is it only display once?
I don't know where it shows exactly, but...
Okay. Well, it's a good way for publishers to earn extra money, and it's a good way to get money back through advertising. But for the reader, I guess, so if it displays once every time you switch it on, that's fair enough. But if it's every other page, it'd be like fucking annoying. But... Kindle, I'm quite surprised how Kindle is quite popular. I mean, I've seen loads of people talking about Kindle and all the ebooks and that. But do you know anyone actually using a Kindle?
I know several people using the Kindle,
and all they do is read books on it, right?
That's all you can do on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you buy these books.
I would invest if I had some spare cash. I'd probably invest into a Kindle. If I had spare time as well to do that enough reading. But I'm into my audiobooks at the moment. But before I discovered audiobooks, if I discovered the Kindle, I would have probably gone ahead with the Kindle. The reading experience on it is very good. And the portability and the availability of the books as well.
And the books, are where you purchase the books from?
The website.
As in, so like, you can... Amazon as well, or no?
yeah, the sales process, yeah, the sales process is flawless. They've got apps on your iPhone, your iPad, and you just buy an ebook and you register your device with your Amazon account, and then it just automatically downloads over there.
Ah, okay. So that's probably why then. Okay. That's probably why Amazon is so fiercely competing with the Apple and iTunes and that, because they've already got this huge backing through Kindle and Kindle users, isn't it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like I said last week, Amazon is really good at this. They made their books available to every single platform out there, regardless of competition or not. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, Kindle, Joel, talking about publishing and paid content, The Daily from News Corp, went to be subscription only on the iPad. So what they've done is they've invested 30 million into having this paid content through iPad only.
Yeah.
First quarter of since this announcement, they made a loss of 10 million. So
wow,
yeah, not many people buying these news contents. I guess it's still young. We'll give it until the end of the year and see where they're at. But still, they're making money. So I mean, they spent 30 million to set it all up and everything. They must have had sales of 20 million to have a loss of 10 million, right?
Yeah, so The Daily generated, yeah. So they had like 800,000 downloads with a 10 million loss in the first quarter of operation. I'd say, yes, that's normal. Because what they set up was, they set up a team of, was it 100 top reporters?
Yeah.
So to concentrate on this application, and they had to go through the partnership with Apple. They must have struck some under the table deals. Mm. And, you know, they spent all that time pushing it and really giving it full-on dedicated content specifically designed for the iPad. And first quarter sales, 800,000, pretty good. You know, almost reaching a million. If they can increase this, then in no time they'll be profitable. Because they're only going to get more efficient and more, attuned to how they create this content. Because they are doing things differently. So it's a learning curve, and they can afford to, you know, Rupert Murdoch can afford 10 million, to be honest. I think he puts a shoe on and he makes 10 million.
Yeah, loose change for them, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think it's the right way forward. And this, you know, Rupert Murdoch is one guy to make this work.
It's true. So if it does work, does that mean others will follow suit? That mean that content will be paid for again? Because I remember internet existed because it was free, the content was free, and therefore everything existed on the internet was free. Now you're going back to the age where you gotta pay for your content.
I don't think we're going back to the age of paying for our content. We're going full circle where people are saying, okay, look, everything is free, yes, and free is of a certain quality. Yes, there's, you know, really high quality free stuff out there, but then you need to find it, and then you need to, you know, filter through all the shit before you get there. And I think if there's a paid option, then a lot of people would be willing to pay. And if you can make a business out of that, then yes, like many of these big websites, they have, you know, free content, but then their long-term goal is to upsell you to their paid solution, which a lot of these tutorial websites do for most of your coding needs and all your, you know, Photoshop needs and all this, selling little bits of snippets, little bit of codes for you, you know, for minimal fee. But then they offer a membership as well, and people pay for this. And I think, yes, you have to have a paid system there somewhere, just so that these people can actually get more money in and create,
continue and providing
content.
So this is exactly where we're at the stage where, you know, we're thinking, okay, do we provide free content and carry on that way, or do we need to get people in and actually pay for them to write good articles that's unique and of high quality, then obviously that needs money. So yeah, it's sort of 50-50. You need to balance it out and find the right thing for your site. Yeah. Okay.
So that's about it we have for this week, right?
Yeah. Well, again, thanks for listening, guys. If you have any content, any news, any feedback, or comments, send them in or let us know. Join the forums, have a chat. I'll let you know more about the competition next week. Again, it's licenses, or I say the serial numbers for ADA 64 Extreme Edition. It's a benchmarking tool for all you benchers and system analytical tool gurus. So, yeah, we'll know more about that next week. We'll have more reviews, more content, and hopefully Loyal will, unless me, we'll do some video content. We've been planning to do this for a while, haven't we, right?
Yes, but trying to get Winston out of his apartment is quite hard.
Right, okay, guys. Well, I think that's it, yeah. Lloyd, so thanks for joining us. So we'll,
until next week, guys.
Catch you next week.